Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
A very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Nakari, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, as BBM Bumbleberry Media, 9.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service. You can have your saber calls on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. All right, thumbs up, hats up to JCU, that's Cairns Campus, Indigenous Names Unveiled. We're very excited about the 50-year celebration, 50-year birthday celebration, and what James Cook has done in regard to approaching our TOs, traditional owners of the land, and giving names to the university. We're going to catch up with Yana with Vice Chancellor Professor President Sandra Harding. Online, Professor Sandra, good morning. How are you?
I am very well, thanks, Trevor. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
Thank you very much, and I would say happy birthday. Not to yourself, but to JCU, 50 years, and also your engagement with the First Nation people and talking about the naming of campuses using First Nation people's, First Nations names.
That's right. It is our 50th birthday, and to have received the wonderful gift of language names from traditional owners for our main campuses in Northern Australia has just been the best birthday present ever.
Good. So tell us about, first of all, the names, and what do we name? Name buildings, or we name the campus, or paint that picture, please, Professor.
So what we have done, and we're very grateful to the traditional owners, of course, is we have named our campuses. The Townsville campus is no longer known as the Townsville or the Douglas campus. It's the Bebegoo Yumba campus, and that was a name gifted to us by the Bindal people, that Spiragubba language. In Cairns, our Cairns campus, which is at Smithfield, which was known as just the Smithfield campus, is now Nomabada, and that is a language name gifted to us by the Irukandji people. Mm-hmm. And in Mount Isa, our campus there is named Murdapuni by the Kalkadoon people. So as part of our celebration, the university conducted consultations with the traditional owners and raised the idea with traditional owners about whether or not they'd be prepared to have a language name for our campuses. So this is our place. So it's on the front entrance of each of our campuses now in Cairns and Townsville in those marble entry statements there going in.
Yes.
These campus names are shown, and as I say, we are so grateful for the gift of these names, which my university and our university council gratefully accepted and accepted with great joy.
Look, it's a term of respect, it's a term of togetherness, a term of one, and moving forward into the future in the same direction, in the same vehicle, a powerful movement, so to speak.
Look, I hope so and I believe so, and that's certainly our intention. Our university has had has been on a reconciliation journey for a long time, a very long time, you know, sometimes perhaps without the full force of the institution behind it. But certainly since 2008, we've made really a sort of concerted effort and to ensure that we are embracing the deep meaning of our place and respectfully acknowledging traditional owners and the land on which we gather and the sea country that we work on as well. So, you know, we've done things in the past. In 2008, for example, we named our library in Townsville for Eddie Koike Mabo. He was a gardener at our university.
Yes.
He used the resources of the library in order to, you know, pursue his land rights struggle. So there's that. We also, in 2010, as part of our 40th birthday, named the creeks that run through Cairns and Townsville campuses with language names, again, gifted by Indigenous peoples. Now, this is a step above that and beyond that.
Mm.
And in this, what we're looking to do is to draw together this twin heritage that we have. You know,
exactly.
You think about that sort of sense of exploration and discovery of truths unknown is what we're all on about, and we want to honour and respect traditional knowledge and traditional truths and ownership of the land.
Professor, with movement going forward, how did it come to fruition? Was there a board level decision? Was there engagement with the TOs from a cup of tea? How did this all come about?
There was extensive engagement with the TOs, and it was over, in some cases, a fairly lengthy period of time, with people from within the university assisting with that consultation.
Yes.
Then ultimately, when the TOs determined the names, decided the name, that came to the university's management and came to our university's board, which is called the University Council, which is chaired by our wonderful Chancellor, Bill Twiddell.
Mm-hmm.
And the University Council, you know, considered whether or not the university should take this historic decision.
Yes.
To name our places forevermore with language names gifted by traditional owners. And the decision, of course, was unanimously in the affirmative.
Yes.
And so that decision was made. And then we were planning on having this year, it being in 2020, you know, what we had hoped to do was to have very, very large events where all members of the university community, but others, of course, outside of the university community, of course, traditional owners, members of the Indigenous community, First Nations people more broadly, as well as other officials could come. But with COVID, we had to scale back the ceremonies, and we waited till the end of the year when we could, in fact, do these ceremonies and have people on site, you know, COVID safe. It was a COVID safe series of events. To make sure that people were in the room. So in each of those ceremonies, we heard from the traditional owners about the name of the meaning of the language name.
Yep.
and what they were gifting to us. And we accept that with as I say, with great joy, with deep gratitude and great respect.
Noombara, the meaning for Noombara is JCU Smithfield campus?
Yes, that one is it's a terrific name for us, Noombara, and it goes to a place of learning, tomorrow's learning, knowledge or wisdom. So again,
lovely.
It's a forward look. It is sort of bringing us together and encouraging us to look forward in knowledge and wisdom together.
So it's beautiful. It's like I said, it's a bridge builder. Fantastic. And like I said, congratulations. Happy birthday. And congratulations in regard to engaging with First Nation people and coming up with the language of your campuses. I think it's fantastic. So thank you for sharing.
Good on you, Trevor. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much for the opportunity to have a chat with you today.
Lovely. Take care, Professor. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Adela Young there, Vice Chancellor, Professor, President Sandra Harding, and talking about the JCU's Cairns Campus Indigenous Names Unveiled, but all across the Northern Australia, as well as Mount Isa and Townsville, and it was great to see. And it is a bridge builder, and recognising First Nation people, that is a must in all industries, in all facets of this big island, 60,000 years inhabited by First Nation people, of course. Fantastic. Thumbs up there. Have your say, yarn up strong, add to the conversation here. National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
If you wanna change your sound, I know the place to go. get on your mouth. It's me, Bushtaka Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Macquarie, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM and Bunbury Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your Sabre call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Terry Ann Hughes, cultural advisor for DV West, and that's one of Sydney's largest domestic violence services. And just talk about on the 27th of November, how they released a landmarking report and a different way of doing it, so to speak, and looking after our women and children. On the line, Terry Ann, good morning, sis. How are you? Before we start, my sister, let the mob know who you mob, where you're from.
Yeah, I'm Terry Hughes. I'm a Wiradjuri woman. From Wellington in Western New South Wales.
Yep.
But born and raised in Western Sydney.
Okay.
Yeah, strong ties to the community both out there and here in Western Sydney.
Too deadly. My sister, how long have you been the cultural advisor for DV West?
Probably a couple of months so far. I have worked for services as the Aboriginal manager.
Yep.
That managed the Aboriginal specific women and children's refuge.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk about the releasing landmark report, a different way of doing it. I feel that especially with the pandemic, COVID-19, a lot of our beautiful women and children were isolated with the perpetrator as they were victims of DV, yes?
That's right. Try and find women and children during that, the COVID-19 without, you know, limited access to support services, but also being restricted in the family home with the perpetrator and without as much support as being on it.
And can you talk about some of the initial top-level results?
Yes, yeah, so pretty much the report indicates sort of what our women and children, the feedback from their experiences during COVID, but also the way that we changed our service delivery, how we sort of identified high-risk clients and also continued our service to ensure that both, you know, our Aboriginal women and children were receiving support, whether that was crisis accommodation, medium-term housing or just outreach support. So a lot of those women who were still in the community, still living at home with the perpetrator,
yes,
ensure that, you know, that they still sat and sort of worked towards a plan to keep them safe and with the perpetrator so that, you know, pretty much.
Yeah, because when you look at the isolation, our women and children were trapped in a way. It was hard for them to communicate for reaching out for help, you know, in regard to, you know, being in the same house, you know, if the perpetrator's checking their phones and texting and all that sort of stuff. So they were closed in, they were locked in, and no way of reaching out for help, yep.
Yeah, you're right. And for the services, because of the pandemic, sort of closing their doors and saying we're not able to provide support. And I think that's the highlight of the report, is that we actually extended services because we knew the rates were increasing during that time.
Yep.
And just sort of changing the way so that, you know, we deliver the service so that we could actually access and reach those people that needed support at that time.
Look, with respect to all our brothers out there, men out there, 99% of the time, it is the man that is the culprit, you know, the perpetrator. But there are some men who the other way, shoes on the other foot, where they've been DV against from the woman, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. Our specifically supports men. And our role is with the Aboriginal victims, but yeah, there was definitely an alarming increase of overall domestic violence in time, and you know, accessing support for men during that time would have been difficult, which we take into consideration as well.
And when you look at some of the reasons or causes of DV, look, we talk about overpowering, we talk about jealousy, we talk about alcohol, money and the lack of, job situation, house situation, all the above, yes?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, exactly right. And I think during COVID, you know, a lot of people lost their jobs. There was a lot of financial stress and, you know, the impact of being 14-7 kids, you know, who were at school, they were stuck at home with mum and dad. So I think there was a lot of stress factors in the home, which contributed to during that time.
Yeah, and when you look at the pandemic and what has caused to turn the world upside down, we all, as in businesses, organisation, industries, life itself, we all had to adapt, didn't we?
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, what the report sort of highlights as well is the good work that can be done with restrictions in place.
Yes.
Things, you know, looking at it from a different angle, that it can be positive, that we, you know, reevaluate the way that we do things and what's going to work for our community, and that evolving, you know, viewpoint as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you very much for sharing, Terry Ann. Listen, all the best to you, your mob there, your team, your family. Stay safe, and we'll yarn soon, sister.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks to you, sir.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
A deadly young there, Terry Ann Hughes, her name is. She's the cultural advisor for DV West, and that's one of Sydney's largest domestic violence service and the only fully Aboriginal staff sheltered Metropolitan Sydney on the launch of the landmark report around the, how COVID-19 has resulted in domestic violence services having to adapt to continue to support women and children during this time. So, look, a very important space, and thinking of all our beautiful women out there and our children out there, love and respect you. And brothers, we just need to check ourselves before we wreck ourselves, is what I like to always say, about being a true warrior of the 21st century, and that's loving that man in the mirror, but also loving and respecting your women and children, please. Okay, have your say, yarn up strong, add to the conversation here, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with Bully on Trevor, Tim, Trendy, Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, as BBM Bummer Media 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. So give me a call on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Yeah, beautiful track there, Land and Sea, and Ether Pitt here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416. Call the number, Yarn, with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumba Brit Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. So give me a call, have your say, Yarn Up Strong. All right, we're going to catch up a yarn there and have a yarn with Jack Wilkie-Jans, contemporary Australian artist, curator, journalist and Aboriginal affairs advocate. And the topic here is Cash's debit card. Look, it's raised its ugly head. It's something we need to talk about. And a big shout to Trevor Peckham, who gave us a call the other day talking about the card and how it's not good for our elders. But give us your opinion. Give us a call, 1-800-422-416. But let's catch up with Jack Wilkie-Jans on the line, my brother. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, I'm good. That was a bit of a mouthful, that intro for me, hey.
Yeah, I'll roll it out there, brother, because you've got a lot of platforms that you sit on, like myself. Yeah. But, brother, thanks for coming. First of all, let the mob know. Who your mob? Where you from, Jack?
So I'm from Western Cape of Cape York, so Marpoon and Gulf of Carpentaria, where we have ancestral links down to there as well with the Wangi tribe. So yes. We're based in Cairns these days, so.
Yeah, so brother, deadly. We've got a connection there, yeah. Wangi. My brother, yeah, look, a very important topic here, cashless debit card. Look, give us your spin on it, please.
You know, obviously this cashless debit card, it's been around for a long time. It's been proposed as a trial. One of the problems I have with a lot of the trials when it comes to welfare issues for, you know, Indigenous peoples is the fact that they're introduced as trials. Mm. And that they're kept for the long term.
Yes.
And now, of course, there's a conversation about, you know, really taking it to the next level, making it something that's far-reaching. It's something that's been, the control of our welfare and it's not new to us. The control of our finances is not new to us. It's just the same thing wrapped up under, you know, coming from a pseudo so-called economic platform. And that's the reason I'm against these cards or this proposal to make it, to entrench it even further, which I'm glad was actually knocked back. But of course, it's not going to go away. Mm. It's from an economic point of view. My opposition to this is, as anybody who lives remote, let alone even if they're in an Indigenous or discrete Aboriginal community,
yes,
would know, is how hard it is for anything in the economic space to take off, to be able to thrive and be supported through a legislative framework to enable it to happen. So, of course, people in those regions and areas would be somewhat welfare dependent. And I just, unless we're making the efforts as a country, or, you know, depending on the government that puts these proposals forward, unless there's going to be equal effort on opening up some kind of industry, and it doesn't need to be mining, it doesn't need to be mass cropping, there's so many other ways that we can, you know, make a buck. Unless there's going to be equal effort put into those endeavours, the control of our welfare, I mean, what you're punishing people on being on a welfare system
exactly.
when you're at the same time not giving them any alternatives. I think it's just...
explain to our listeners there, Jack, explain the cashless debit card, how does it work, and let's talk about the pros and cons of it all.
I'm not too familiar with what the changes they want to propose to be in terms of its specific, but essentially what it is a quarantine of your, where anyone else in any other part of Australia would be able to receive their, you know, welfare payments and be able to use them for really whatever they want. Ideally, it's for, you know, food and shelter and necessities as well. The difference, though, with the cashless welfare card is that only certain things are able to be used for it to be used to spend. So, you know, whether or not, I mean, there wouldn't be any cinemas, but whether or not you'd be able to go to a cinema and use, you know, the money there for popcorn or for a drink, you probably wouldn't be able to. The other problem is when somebody is in an area or a region identified under this plan, what happens when they are travelling? What happens if you come from a community in Cape York down to Cairns for the weekend?
Yes.
You know, the thing with welfare is it's not only a means there to provide the necessities of life, it's also there to provide a quality of life. And when you're quarantining the income that people are having, through welfare, all of a sudden, I think it's just very unfair to ask certain groups of people to only spend their money on certain things. I think it's extremely paternalistic, and as we know...
Well, there's a term of controlling, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but you can't... There's so much that's controlled, even your option to make money. So it's not an economic platform. They say that it's being introduced from an economic platform, but when you see the lack of effort and the lack of political will that there is to really get the regions engaged in tourism and you know, any kind of farming or any kind of cattle or any kind of industry at all, you realise then that it's a lie that this is coming from a place of economic certainty. It comes from a place of control.
Well, the Australian government is using it as the best possible way to support people, families and communities in places where high levels of welfare dependence coexist with high levels of social harm. So we're talking about a solution, so to speak, of drug and alcohol and misuse of problem gambling. But not all people have a problem with alcohol, drugs or gambling.
That's right. And of course, there are proponents who are, you know, Indigenous, who are in agreement with these plans. And of course, their opinions matter as well, and they should be considered. And of course, there are cases, and there's some communities that have, you know, more drastic cases. And this could be an approach, you know, to address and stem the flow of money to places where it shouldn't be. But I've always wondered, you've got everyone in this country has the right to succeed, but we also have the right to fail, and some people don't make the right decisions about what they spend their money on and how they socialise and whatnot. But that's not really what the government, let alone a conservative government, stands for. We shouldn't be dictating those kind of particulars to people. We have a criminal justice system. If you break the law, if you buy illegal booze, if you sell it illegally, if you engage in a fight while you're drunk, we have a legal system to penalise people for those things. So if you fail, you have, you know, you know what you're in for. But to tell people we're not even going to give you the option to make the right decisions for you on your own behalf, I just
When you look at that, when you look at the case of alcohol and drugs and even gambling, you know, it's a form of addiction, and people with addiction need help. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And to support to control them is not the help they need.
And it's very similar to the issue of the alcohol management plans up in the Cape. You've got these communities that are allegedly so badly riddled with alcohol, and yet there's not a single not a single service in the community that isn't fly in, fly out to provide any kind of support for people with an alcohol or a drug or substance abuse addiction. But yet, you're more than welcome to get a $70 fine if you take in a bit of booze. I just think that if you're going to identify a problem, you need to have more than just a punitive approach in addressing it. And it's just not on the table.
It's not one size fits all either.
Exactly, and it's not about addiction, it's not about economy, it's about controlling people's welfare. And the best people to start with when you want to look at, if you want to try to control the population, you hit the Indigenous people first.
Yeah.
It has always been with governments, it has been across the world, we're the guinea pigs, I don't approve of it.
But like you said, it's a trial, but then it stays there forever, doesn't it?
Well, that's the problem. Is they'll come in and say that these things are trials, but the thing is, they haven't looked at where this trial has failed, and yet they're proposing to take it from a trial phase and make it some kind of a mandatory procedure. Or one of the problems we have is, where's the opt-in and opt-out ability? Mm. If I've heard stories where if you're from a community with the cashless card, even if you were to change address and move for a job opportunity to a larger city, you're still kept under those welfare paradigms as you were in back home.
Mm.
So, you know, I just really find that it doesn't sit right. The ability to opt out of it, even if you were to move for a job or family reasons or anything, I just find that that's very restricting. It's very unfair.
Jack, the other thing that comes to mind is it's especially for our elders, it takes them back to the control back in the 60s, 70s, whatever, government controlling under the thumb. under the Act?
You know, my people in my family have just had payouts for the stolen wages, not payouts, paybacks, I should say.
Yes.
And so we've got this whole thing about, you know, we're finally getting somewhere in getting our wages back that were stolen. And now all of a sudden, not only are they trying to steal our wages, they're trying to make sure that you don't get any. And it's all it's doing is entrenching a political ideology, and it's entrenching poverty onto Indigenous peoples. Because if you want to get people off of the welfare system, you have to give them something to go off of welfare onto. And at the moment, especially in Queensland, especially in the Cape, the legislative framework about how to do pretty much anything, the fees associated for applications, let alone actual process, is so high that people can't afford to really branch out and go, well, hang on, I want us to open a shop, or I want to do this or that. All of a sudden, there's so many rules that don't apply to cities like Cairns that inhibit what you can do. And then your only option is welfare, but because you're on the welfare, we're going to treat you like a criminal because of it. It's just... it's ludicrous. It's lazy policy as well. There's no holistic approach, and it's just, I can't believe that it's being entertained as a solution in its own right, because it's not a solution in its own right.
Well, the conversation is front and centre, and thank you very much for sharing. We've had many calls about this, and it's good to hear all sides of the story. And it's very important that we do discuss it and put it out there and have a say of the so-called trial.
The more people that ring in, the more people that have their say on Facebook, emailing their MPs, ringing their local ministers or whatever, that's the only way to get our voices heard. Because, you know, it's not saying that there necessarily isn't a place for these proposed cashless welfare cards. Is just saying that the way it is at the moment is not appropriate.
To Daddy, my brother, thank you for calling. All the best. You take care, Jack.
Anytime. You too. See you later, Uncle.
See, bro. Beautiful yarn there. That's Jack Wookie Jans. And look, talking about the cashless welfare card, the final interview with Jack for the year. Big shout out, my brother. And Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you and your family. And look, cash a debit card. Froze and the fours and against it. So give us a call. Have your say. 1-800-422-416.
People talking about their great big cities, how they claim to never go to sleep. Really haven't seen this small town raging on a Friday. Well, let me tell you, that's good enough on me. Yes, it is. That's what country is and what country does. Say hey, brother, and how are you, cuz? Come on in, spend some time with us. That's what country is and what country does. Yes, it does. Well, we had a cousin visit us once from the big smoke. On the rope at the river, she didn't even give it a spring. By the end of the week, she was mixing it up with the locals. She hit the track with the Outback under her skin. Yes, she did. That's what country is and what country does. Say hey, brother, and how are you, cuz? Come on and spend some time with us. That's what country is and what country does. Yes, it does. Yeah. And red is fine by me. What country is, what country does. Say hey, brother, and how are you, cuz? Come on in and we'll make a fuss. country is and what country does. Say hey brother and how are you cuz. Come on and spend some time with us. That's what country is and what country does. That's what country is and what country does. Yes it does now. Country is, country does.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, your deadly mob. Welcome back to your deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumba Rip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling from that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Now, keeping the Dungari language alive, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Caroline Bradshaw, Community Language Coordinator on the line. Sister Caroline, good morning. How are you?
Oh, yeah, why?
Very good morning. Thank you, my sister. First of all, let the mob know who your mob were you from.
Okay. My mob is Dungari mob down in the Macleay Valley at Kempsey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A deadly footprint. A deadly footprint, yes. Now, look, a common struggle for Aboriginal elders is how to make their language and culture appeal to young people in order for language to be carried on. That's very, very important. But in regards to the Dungari language, you're talking to elders there. We're a little bit hesitant in regarding sharing the information as well, yes?
Yes, they were, like, when I first started, she was a bit hesitant when when I first started to talk to her about language and that, but yeah, finally talked to her around and yeah, she built up, built up a good relationship with each other and yeah, she trusted me and yeah.
So the hesitation wasn't because of shyness, it was mainly protecting the language, was hesitant in putting it out there, you reckon?
Yeah, it was more of protecting the language, not shyness. It was just, yeah, but yeah.
And there was some promise you put on the table as well for Auntie there? Is that right, Caroline?
Yes, there was. She was very protective of it, and she just wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to do anything silly with the language and not use it to benefit myself and to benefit the community. And and that's what we're trying to do.
Let's keep that promise.
Keep that promise and restore it back in our kids, wake it up and bring it back alive to our kids.
Now, of course, Auntie's with us in spirit, and I believe her daughter has come back to the township and she helps now, is that right?
When Auntie Rita passed away, Auntie Esther came along, but Auntie Esther passed about 2-3 years ago now.
Okay.
And, so she left a legacy of, she wanted to give the kids a dreaming story, so we did a lot of the dreaming stories and actually did a book so that our stories would never be forgotten. So we started doing that. So, and some of them were in language that the old people had recorded before this, before we put it out, and they were in language. So we did it in language and we did it in English. So
fantastic! Really, and you're working with some of the other elders at the table as well in the community. Yep.
Yes, I do. Bob Smith, Robert Smith, he's a Dungari man. He's father and mother. His mother is my mother's sister, and his father is a proud Dungari man. And she was a Ewan, my mother and her sister Irene, who was Bob's mother. They were a Ewan mob from down the south coast. And
so, with the language there, Caroline, have you put the language in a dictionary, and are you teaching young ones or putting it through schools? Tell us what you're doing with the information.
Yeah, well, what we did, we actually did a dictionary back in 2007, I think it was, and we had a lot of those old people that have now gone help put together the dictionary. We had another one, a second edition done just recently. The first one was done by Amanda Lissarak and Alissara, and she's a linguist, and she also did the second edition, making it a little bit more friendly for our mob.
Yep.
Yeah, so, you know, because when you get the dictionaries, they're pretty hard to read and that, so Amanda's tried to make it a little bit more friendly for our mob so they can pick it up, and, you know.
Especially our young ones, to keep it strong and pass it on, yes?
Yes, yes. And then we've created a lot of resources for in schools and that, so when we first started, we did a lot of smart board stuff, just PowerPoints and things, and adding voices to it, because our information actually came from a whole list of really old people, and, you know, they pass on the language to linguists. Without them doing that, you know, we probably wouldn't have any language to revive.
Yes.
So, you know, that was a very important part of it, and even telling the stories and that from this area. So they put it all down with linguists, and there was a whole, you know, list of linguists that did it with them, and then Amanda picked it up and came to us and asked us if we wanted to try and put it in a dictionary. The main thing was that our language was spoken and not written, so we had to find a sound system that would suit our language, and it was pretty hard, and it, like I said, there was a whole list of elders that came together and helped Amanda do that. And
fantastic.
And then the second, second edition has come along, and, you know, a little bit, because we've learned a fair bit.
Yes.
So we changed a few little things, like a little bit of the spelling and that.
Good.
Not saying that it's not good, but it's really good. Sometimes I think the sound system that we use actually don't complement our language. You know, there are.
Well, the sound in is very important, just as the spelling, so to speak, isn't it?
Yeah.
Have you had communication? Did you have at the table communication with IATSIS, Australian Institute of Aboriginal Torres Strait Island Studies?
Yes, we did. IATSIS actually put out for people that were almost completing a dictionary or wanted to update their dictionaries.
Yeah.
So they actually funded for the program to happen. Good. And it's funny that the fellow from IATSIS, the manager, I think it's the manager or the whatever he, I'm not quite sure what he is.
His position,
he's his position, yeah. He's also a Dungati person. So
there you go, it's meant to be. The spirits are strong, aren't they?
They really are. Things just sort of click into
place.
That's
right. That's beautiful. I got goosebumps. Are you just hearing that yarn?
I'm really proud of what Amanda's created.
Yes, big shout out to Amanda.
Big shout out to Amanda. She's done a great job.
And thank you very much for sharing, my sister. I think it's fantastic. And, keeping the Dungati language alive, and you're doing just that. So more power to you and all the mob there. And thank you very much for sharing. And you take care, Sister Caroline. We'll be yarning soon, sis.
Okay, then. Thank you.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Balu.
Balu, so beautiful, deadly yarn there that's keeping the Dungati language alive, and having a beautiful yarn there with the Sister Caroline Bradshaw. She's the Community Language Coordinator, and look, the dictionary is out there, and yarning with the mob there and the elders, and communicating with the people of the world about the beautiful language of the Dungati people. So fantastic. You can have your say, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Call that number, yarning with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Macquarie. The host for the daily program, National Talk Black, and we come to you live from First Station Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumba Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. So give the Murray a call. Let's have a yarn. Too deadly. 1-800-422-416.
nigaba inigaya kumgala niriunye wagi gunginiye urung mipdubungina nigaba ninana anabamna anmuchimbo arnalinga tiwi warriors tiwi warriors tiwi warriors tiwi warriors ani minigini bogurongi jinja arngapa gigali yach jitu rukunga ra nir wolchi nirniye uwarge guniniya analinga tiwi warriors tiwi warriors tiwi warriors tiwi warriors tiwi warriors
Yeah, Daily Track there, Tiwi Warriors, Leather Stick Band here on your daily program, National Talk Black. It's come the time where Murray going to sign off here. You mob, I thank you very much for your company. We're back in the hot seat again tomorrow with that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, you mob, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. More importantly, stay safe. We're still in the pandemic. Do not be lackadaisy at Christmas time, party time, yes, but be careful out there in regard to the pandemic. And big shout out, got the news coming up here very soon, so stay tuned. BBM, 98.7 FM, and Nurse, thank you very much, and IRS, to deadly.
Hey, Dipper Dan here. Can I get a ticket to the Mangrove Hotel, please?
T.I. Taxi driver going round and round. A giant traffic circle in a tiny town. Knows everybody's business. What's going on? T.I. Taxi driver going round and round.
Ronnie's parked under the almond tree, eating kai kai from Mary's bakery, waiting for another call to come, just enough time for a sweet cream bun.
T.I. taxi driver going round and round, a giant traffic circle in a tiny town. Knows everybody's business, what's going on? T.I. taxi driver going round and
Victor's doing a late pub run, Friday night and everybody's having fun. But he knows he's got to work late and get up in the morning in the taxi by 8.